Hi everybody and welcome to Josh Wright Speaks. Right, so as you know, we're being recorded. Now the people at home, I'm guessing fairly low intelligence. They're not going to know how many people can fit in this room. They don't know that it's a capacity of about 20. So let's make it sound like 20,000. When I count to three again, I want us to blow the absolute bollocks off this room. Right, so one, two, three. It's actually a world record for poetry, I think, possibly. Anyway, so tonight, as usual, we've got open micers. We've got two absolutely stonking headliners as well. Changing the format up a little bit for tonight. We're going to start with a headliner, have a break. Open micers, have a break. Headliner. Just to let you all know, you've got two wee breaks this time. If you're at home, you can have as many wee breaks as you want, just don't take us to the toilet. I'm going to start with a story from a book, which was chosen by Grogan. He doesn't know he chose it, I just asked him for a number, and this is the one that it came on. So if you don't like it, it's his fault. It's called Cerulean. Saying nothing, they sit and eat. He coughs vehemently into a handkerchief, inspecting the contents with Poirot-like inquisitiveness, while she looks on, tutting, slicing morsels and chewing politely. They do not look at each other, saying nothing. She places her hand on the table. He slides his fingers between hers, saying nothing at all. Thank you. Right, so I rambled on quite a bit at the start there. Just words got away from me a little bit, as they are doing now. So I'm going to let our first headliner introduce himself. But before he does that, I'm going to say, and that bollock-blowing reception you gave, that sounded, yeah, phrasing, absolutely, that sounded wrong, but I'm sticking with it. Bollock-blowing reception that you gave the opener tonight. Bollock-blowing, I like saying it, bollock-blowing, but I keep saying it, bollock-blowing. I want us to recapture that as I welcome to the stage Mike Bennigan.
Thanks for coming. Thanks for inviting me and stuff. My name is Mike Bennigan. I've been trying to think of a cool poet name, but so far no luck, because Jeff Moriarty has already taken and so is William Wordsworth, so, you know, whatever. Right, I'm going to start tonight with one that's a bit hard-hitting, actually. Because I think sometimes when we go through life, we just feel a bit helpless, you know? Like a fish in a tank. So I've written a poem, and it's called Helpless, Like a Fish in a Tank. The horror unfolds before your eyes. Your entire family, laid bare in front of you. They are not moving. They are not screaming. Why are they not screaming? You are screaming. Well, your mouth opens and closes, but no sound comes out. The carnage continues, mere feet away, yet you feel so distant. It is like looking through thick glass. It is like you are underwater, yet somehow you are still breathing. You are helpless, like a fish in a tank. Because that's what you are. You are literally a fish in a tank. In a fish and chip shop, watching while your entire family is butchered. Or mongered, whatever the verb for a fishmonger is. You beat your fish fists and fish fingers against the tank in fishy rage. You swim back and forth, in anguish inside your fishy cage. Round the back of the little castle that opens and make the bubbles. Through the tangly-tangly weeds and the brightly coloured pebbles. You are thrashing, splashing and gnashing your teeth, or at least you would if fish had teeth, while your underwater world comes crashing down around your ears if fish had ears. It's carnage and chaos and complete madness, and then nothing. You feel nothing. But bliss. Ignorant bliss. What was everyone not screaming about again? You have forgotten. Because you are a fish. Cheers. So yeah, that one was a little bit complex emotionally. Themes of loss and helplessness. A lot of strong imagery there. Of, well, mainly fish. But, don't worry, this one is just one I wrote about a funny YouTube video I saw. It's called Your Majesty. The mighty peregrine falcon. Such majesty with which he roams the skies. Delicacy and poise. Real, royal and regal. Over coast and cliff and marshland he flies. Winged terror. Long, broad, pointed wings carve longer, broader, more pointed shadows on the grassy downs. Whilst the pigeons, mice and little yellow duckies quiver and quake and quack in their little ducky boots and beds as the awesome royal procession passes swiftly overhead. Watch him rise above his lush dominion, climbing up, 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 high above his plush kingdom, like Icarus, but the real deal. Wings glisten but do not melt in the morning sun. He surveys the rolling hills beneath him, eagle-eyed. Also, you know, but well. Then suddenly, the stoop. Down, down, down he plummets at speeds that would crush any normal bird's tiny, pathetic lungs, but not those of the king. He gallops towards the earth. Down, down, down. And straight into the path of an oncoming lorry. Splat. Not so fucking majestic. I think it's called like Danish hunting falcon fail or something if you want to look it up. Alright, back to the deep shit. So this one is about how infatuation with a certain something or thing can often lead us to overlook the imperfections in that certain something or thing. Yeah. So it's a normal human emotion, I think, you know. This one's called An Ode to My Girlfriend, who slept with my friend, and so now she is my ex-girlfriend. Her smile shines as bright as the morning star. But not just in the morning. At lunchtime and tea time and dinner time and supper times too, she beams at me like an angel that is really, really happy. Her eyes sparkle like pools of Buxton water in which little children dance and splash about. They laugh gaily. She gazes at me like an angel with excellent 20/20 vision. Her hair glints in the sunlight like a bright copper penny, brand spanking new from the bank, embossed with a print of Peter Rabbit or some other shit. She tosses her hair at me like an angel in a L'Oreal advert. Her nose, all round and cute and adorable like a widow fluffy button. If a puppy could be a button, it would be her nose, if that makes sense. She sniffs at me like an angel with a bit of a cold. And I love her. No longer. That smile is a crooked witch smile, filled with raggedy rows of razor-sharp piranha teeth, jaw dislocating to swallow my head like the snake she is. She has also swallowed my heart. Those sparkling pools are puddles of street water, filled with empty crisp packets and feces and other filth that has given the children cholera in their lungs, and me breaking my heart. The hair is still penny-coloured, but it's a penny you find on the floor of the gents when you're pissed or something. And it's been stepped on. Like my heart. That stupid puppy button nose has fallen off! Rolled under the bed! And you can rest assured that I will not be asking my nana to sew it back on. Perhaps Nana can sew my heart back together instead. Thank you. Cheers. I'll keep the ball rolling. This is another one. another complex emotional poem that addresses the feelings, the broad scope of feelings. You've got hatred, disbelief, awe and respect. That I feel when I sit down and watch University Challenge. So yeah, it's a tough time. As seen through the eyes of Jeremy Paxman. I'm just going to have to say as well, Greg, you kind of inspired the first line of this poem last time. You'll see why in a second. So yeah. This is my dojo, thinks Jeremy Paxman. Inside these four walls, I am judge, jury, and axeman. He stares at the eight with clear distaste. Bows, Biggs, Hosegood, Hewitt, McDade, Ritchie, Haste, who wait with bated breath and mounting anticipation for their time to shine in front of the nation. Smug little pricks. I am God, do you understand? I hold all eight of your fates in the palm of my hand. Pathetic worms, you are less than worthless, less than nothing. And when you leave university, your debt will be shocking. Thinks Jeremy Paxman. Massages his knuckles, then slowly he cracks them. Picks up his fat stack of facts and attacks them. Question after question after question after question. Each one designed to torment and test them. Baffle, bewilder, perplex and best them. Smug little bastards, I hate them, I hate them. Here, have some questions on Rodin and Saxony, Caroline Herschel, Russian regional obscurity, and the physical constant known commonly as the permeability of free space. What even is that? And to whom is that known commonly? Paxman laughs. Deep down inside, he loves dashing dreams, self-esteem, crushing pride. This is his dojo, and he is John Kreese. But where are the tears and cries to cease? Something is terribly wrong here, he sees, for these smug little freaks still look quite at ease. Smiles all round as they are addressed, and they are not stressed. But chew up and swallow and then digest each question after question after question after question that Jeremy Paxman continues to ask them. Then all of a sudden a strange feeling arises, for as he stares deep into their smug little eyes, he finds that what lies behind is a sizable surprise, for the eyes contain no reprisal. Just fresh-faced youth and the desire to do welly, and an admiration for Paxman, because he's on the telly. He struggles to regain his haughty composure, but the hatred inside him is raging no longer. Instead, there remains simply awe. Raw awe for these kids and what their lives have in store. They will fly, they will soar, they will race, they will roar. Through first-class degrees, careers, and more. But at he who hath treated them like such a bore, they refuse to stop grinning. These kids are winning, winning at life, and now university challenge. So much success. How will they manage? Well, thinks Jeremy Paxman. Though some will be scholars, and some will be surgeons. Who gives a fuck anyway? They're still a massive fucking virgin. Yay!
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mike, can I jump in at it? Can you rather print queen just stop it, please? Ooh. Thank you. It's just going to pick up on the recording really, really loudly.
My limelight. don't know how we're doing for time, but I think it's probably about time for my poem about feminism. Okay?
It is about that time.
Yeah. That's right, folks. The straight, white, middle-class male has a poem about feminism. Strap yourselves in. Feminism. That word. Those connotations. Treating women as equals? Let's just call it what it is, eh, lads? Common sense? Thank you. It's the classic Betty and switcheroo. This next one's called compliment, because I get like this weird thing where I get a lot of mixed messages, usually from women, not gonna lie. This one's called compliment, so you'll probably see why in a minute. A woman called me sex on legs, and I wasn't sure whether to be contented or offended. It's a compliment, she said, but I wasn't so sure. You see, sex on legs is a physical impossibility, as sex is not a solid entity, not like cheese on toast, that's self-explanatory, and delicious. But sex on legs sounds impractical, horribly impractical and gross. But let us say, for argument's sake, that sex has manifested itself in physical state. It would be very unpleasant, I think. A hairy, leery, heaving, seething mass of moaning pink that stinks to highest heaven and goes limp when it drinks. And it's time. So that's the sex. Then there's the legs. Are they normal legs? Are they sexy sex legs? Or what gender are the sex legs? Male sex? Female sex? Gender neutral sex? I'm not sexist. I'm just curious, you know? Do the sex legs wear trousers? What brand of trousers does sex buy, given that sex usually sells? Adidas, M&S, S&M. Are the trousers clean, or are they covered in, you know, sex fluids? Where does sex do its dry cleaning? Probably Johnson's, just like the rest of us. What is the financial status of sex? Where does sex live? In the city? It would be pretty shitty to live in the city if sex didn't have some sort of part-time job, McDonald's or TK Maxx, perhaps. Or maybe it's just a regular sex worker in the private sex sector, self-funding its personal sexploits. But then again, you'd usually just use the term sex on legs to describe someone who is sexy, I suppose. I turn to thank the woman for her kind remarks, but she's fucked off ages ago. Thank you. Yeah. This one's really short, anyway, because I've been experimenting with form last night. See how this one goes.
Why has his voice changed? Why has it become so deep? This is a low coup. Oh, wow. Thank you.
Anybody got a job in here? Yeah. Good for you. Well, I'm a millennial with a job, so how many of those do you know? This one's called Birthday. Hopefully some of you can relate to it if you work in an office or something. Is there anything more depressing than an office birthday card? The rockiest of rocky rock bottoms. The nadir of personalised sociality. A mournful reminder of your mournful mortality. 40. You are 40 years of age today. Hooray. The card's conception is a tragic affair, far from immaculate, with ink smudges and coffee cup stains, passed around from colleague to colleague to colleague, like a common paper prostitute. Filled with faceless names that you don't recognise, scrawled in handwriting that you can't read. What a lovely gesture. And the messages themselves, heartfelt messages from the heart. Ha ha, there's no heart at the heart of these heartfelt messages. Don't make me laugh, you can barely tell them apart. Happy birthday, Pete. Best wishes on your birthday, Pete. Have a good birthday, Pete. Aha, birthday boy Petey. And the managing director, distinguishable by his slender P's and spidery T's. Thanks for all your hard work. Wishing you all the best on your birthday, Peter. You've worked here for 10 years, and your name is Simon. Unbelievable. Yeah, right, okay, think maybe. Oh, this one's quick. This one's quick. The big one. Right, this one's called work as well. So some of you might be thinking, ooh, two poems about work, Mike. Bit of a pattern going on there? No. Just a coincidence. This one's called work. Have you ever had a piss with your boss? No, not piss off the boss. Everyone has pissed off the boss once or twice. No, not piss off the boss. Piss with your boss? Your boss is called Chris. Well, not a piss with your boss, Chris. Like piss next to your boss, Chris, you know. You piss, your boss, that is. Chris pisses, the piss sloshes, bitch boss. Chris stops, you stop. Awkward pause. More piss from Chris the boss. Now, you don't want to look like a sissy's off toss pot in front of Chris the boss, so you piss a bit more. Next to your piss pot boss, whose name is Chris, who you're trying not to piss off because he's your boss. But the piss keeps sloshing, and the boss keeps pissing. And you want to stop pissing, but you can't. And now the boss locks eyes with you, and it's a weird, pissy, bossy boss look dead in the eyes. The boss is pissed off. You've pissed off the boss, whose name is Chris, by pissing, participating in the piss competition against the boss, this piss pot of a boss. Why are you in a pissing piss competition with your pissing boss, whose name is Chris? How much piss in this piss pot, Chris pot, piss? Then it stops. The piss flow stops, the penis flops, put it away. Zip, 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 a quick hand wash, and the boss is off. Chris is off, pissed off, at his loss, his big boss loss in the piss competition with his pissing piss pot employee. Thank you.
I think if that's all right, I'll just go for one more.
Yeah.
Cheers. Thank you. You've been really nice. Thank you. Yeah, so my final poem's a big fuck you to the corporations. Because as you'll all have gathered by now, you know, serious political and social commentary is sort of a thing. Not. Yes. So this one's called An Open Letter to Walker's Crisps. Dear Walker's Crisps, how dare you? How dare you be so wildly inappropriate, graphic and obscene? I am disgusted, I am offended, I am facially green. And utterly sickened by your marketing scheme, that in such times of tenseness and high sensitivity, you should insensitively push such nonsensical commercial activity. Grab vag. Really? Grab vag. Amazing. Did you really think that such despicable phrasing, shamelessly emblazoned on your snap packs for grazing, would simply pass by the public without somebody stating, wait! Hang on a damn minute! It's fucking horrible. Grab vag. As a slogan on a packet of crisps. What kind of messages does that send to our kids? Bad ones. Obviously. Ugh. The arrogance of the corporations. Fat cats grown arrogant and fat on profits and crisp. Crisp banknotes that they briskly whisk into their pockets and crisp crisps that they swiftly stuck between their lips. How do they sleep at night? I'll tell you. The mattresses filled with crisps. A giant crisp packet for a duvet and two smaller ones for pillowcases next to Gary Lineker. Who lies there naked and crying in a pool of salt and vinegar.
What have I done?
He sobs. Grab badge, Gary. Grab badge. Well, enough is enough. It's time for action. A national formation of a multi-platform, multi-pack, anti-fascist faction that will rise up and challenge this damn corporation that view women and their rights, plaques and badges like meat, just like bacon. But it's not even bacon, it's like artificial bacon flavours, which are minging and rank no better than quavers. So let's go to The Guardian and BBC News. Let us write letters to celebrities. They'll know what to do. Don unified clothes like at the BAFTAs and the Golden Globes, but this time not black robes. Oh no, no, no. This time a crisp line of mode will steal the show. Resplendent they'll tread down the red carpet in front of the press in aluminium crisp pack apparel to keep the message fresh. Grab that. Badge, no. Hashtag stop grabbing. No one should be grabbing badge nor reading it on their crisp packets. It's 2018. It is time for change. Please find attached an example of one such abhorrent item. It is evidence to my letter and, well, it's a little creased, so I'll try and make it better. You know, just straighten it out so I can see clearly that... Right. It seems that the packet was a little crumpled around the offending phrase, and that I can now see that it actually says grab bag. which is obviously a reference to the size of the packet, and not, in fact, an instruction. Yours sincerely, Michael James Bedigan. Thank you very much. Cheers.
Time where, because we're just about to take a break, I would say let's thank everyone who's just performed. But there's only been one, so we're going to have to concentrate all that applause that we'd normally have for multiple people into one. So, bollock blowing again. 3, 2, 1. I'm going to keep saying that until it catches on. I might have to make a hashtag. That's just kids doing it. Bollocks blowing. Right, so we're going to take a quick 10-minute break. We're going to come back. We're going to have some headliners. Not headliners, the other one. Open micers. Katie, edit that out. Right, so we'll see you in 10 minutes. Yeah, thanks, guys. I kind of petered out then. Simoned out. Right, we'll see you in 10 minutes, guys. Enjoy your break. Woo! Welcome back to the second of three halves of Just Right Speaks. Right, I've just got to say to the listeners as well, another 10,000 people have just come in and are about to make a lot more noise than they were in the first bit. So I'm going to go 3, 2, 1. I just like having you all at my command, it's brilliant. Okay, so this half we've got open mic, as I'm going to kick off with another shortish poem that is probably going to have what some might find an offensive accent at the end, purely because I can't do it. It's the Scottish accent and the crapping accent. I could sense the tension in the room and I could feel fingernails embedding. What fucking accent is he about to do? Yeah. Jesus. Right, it's called North Bridge. I stop on the North Bridge as dust clouds, filtered orange and purple, hang overhead. A student, possibly a tourist, maybe both, bumps into me, smiling apologetically through dreadlocks, patting the logo of his global hypercolour t-shirt as he carries on walking, fading into the torrent of festival goers. I stand in silence, looking over the old stone barriers into the distance. There is a black and red Gothic style church, cathedral, whatever it is, it blazes in the foreground of this elegant sunset amidst buildings old and new and distant mountains. All of a sudden, the clamorous crowd is drowned out by a crack overhead. The clouds flee as a fighter jet bursts past directly over the church, and within seconds, it's gone. Lost my place. Cut this, Katie. This was 6 years ago. In total, seeing the sunset, the church, hearing the sky boom, and glimpsing the jet took less than a minute, but the memories never left me. I turn around and see to my left a street performer walking towards me, a vintage mime. To my right, a staunch old Scottish man rattles his way through the crowd. Their paths collide. He glares with fury at the mime. The mime tries to make light of this anger, a joke of moving way, but an invisible wall blocks his path. I was going to carry on doing that till I got a little laugh, no matter what. The Scottish man barges past and continues on his way. Just before he's out of earshot, I hear him say to himself, "I'll be glad when all these cunts fuck off home." Thank you. I lost faith in the accent. So, there we go. Right, open micers. Are we ready for some open micers?
Yeah.
Right. Yes. What's the buzz phrase of the night, John?
I've no idea.
Rosa, what's my favourite phrase of the night?
Bollock blowing.
Bollock blowing. Woo! Let's have some bollock blowing noise as I welcome Matthew Hatfield. Woo!
Now, yes, that's my name, Matthew Hatfield. Yes, and now I'm going to do some sit-down comedy, if that's alright with you. So, yeah, the other day I went to uni, and someone came up to me with a flyer. I looked to the flyer, I read it, and it said, 10 minutes of brisk walking counts as physical activity. Is this a joke?
You're like, no.
No, no, no. This is deadly serious. Everyone, even you, Matthew, need to walk more. Oh my God, I'm sorry. So I said, oh, thank you for the lifeline, and I went away. And later that day, I thought, what would be funny? I'll put it on Facebook, so I took a picture of it. I put it on Facebook and I put a caption on top which said, how insensitive. And that 99% of the people on Facebook found this funny. But there was one person, I won't reel their name, but it would be mean, didn't find it funny. They took it very seriously. They said, Matthew, I totally understand your views on this, but this poster is named after the Walkers of Society. Oh, so you're telling me the poster which says 10 minutes of brisk walking is counts as physical activity is made for people who can walk. I would never have made those connections. Well, anyway, yeah, I moved on from that quite quickly. And you know when you meet people, you smile, don't you? And sometimes smile back, or sometimes like the other day, I smile at someone and they put the middle finger up at me. Bolton's a lovely place, isn't it? But the other day, I smiled at someone in the uni and they said, oh, are you John? Are you John? No, I'm not John. He went, oh, but you know John, don't you? He's in a wheelchair too. I said, we don't know everyone. But sometimes we know everyone in a wheelchair. Like we call it the wheelchair gang. Yes, wheelchair gang. And if you ever offend us in any way, we will find you on Facebook and we will hunt you down. But if you go upstairs, well, fuck you. Yeah, I'm just gonna say one more thing. Earlier today, I got an email saying I've got a job interview. I was like, oh, cool. But I haven't told them that I'm in a wheelchair, so I'm really looking forward to go to that job interview and going, surprise! Thank you.
You to keep the round of applause going. I saw that person, I know who it was. I'm not afraid to name and shame you. I'm not going to. Katie, I'll record it later and drop it in the end. So let's welcome now Paul Grace. Woo!
Right, just another gentle philosophical poem, I think we'll call it. Yes. Oh, to be outside Selfridges with the olive trees in the howling gale and driving snow, dreaming of Mediterranean fields and warm sun. Oh, to be next to Pedro's Pizza Bar, windswept and frozen, contemplating a visit to a seaside bar in a sun-drenched Spanish resort. So swift are my delusions, dashed so rapidly, my harmless fantasies whisked away. Here is the maxim, clearly spoken by life's experience. Welcome back to the real world. It's better for you in the long run. Face the music before it's too late, and man up to what's really there. Grasp nettles and other pain-giving things, and learn another lesson. It's the masochists that enjoy life, while the sadists just watch them. Don't fret, for all will be revealed in later life, cushioned by life's shock absorbers, otherwise known as alcohol and drugs, which will help in the same way as procrastination and denial. I heard a truthful phrase once, if the poor had no arseholes, the price of shit would rocket. So true I thought, such a comforting thought in times of trouble, such wise words send us on our way. Some say, we are born, we are suffered, sorry, we are born, we suffer, we die. But I say, we are born. We act or we procrastinate. The choice is yours.
Right, let's keep the round of applause going for Tiana Russell.
So a couple of weeks ago, I went over to Huddersfield and did this street poetry workshop with this guy called Simon Widdop. It was all right. He was not bad. And I wrote this poem as part of the workshop, so it's a bit of an experimentation. We just have to kind of go with it, okay? So it would probably be called Libraries. Libraries. Cathedrals of learning, vaulted spaces of inspiration, places for reflection, introspection, exploration, expression, a route out of rigidity, fixity for the working classes of yesteryear. Investment, advancement, improvement, a camera obscura into different worlds, that precious ticket, an avenue to multiple books, week on week, year on year. Books in, books out, recording seen and heard, well worth the occasional fine for time lost. Some Mandarin decides they're no longer relevant. People have access to information digitally. Books can be read online. These haunting places could be exorcised. And money saved for more valuable causes. Shut down the building, save costs, lose staff. The local authority has different priorities, like schools and care and bins. The statutory takes precedence over the discretionary, and Berry's tagline is a cleaner, safer, greener borough. So libraries are cut from 20 to 3, following so-called consultation. I object. I do so online, on postcard, in person. I point out the short-sightedness, the stupidity, the crass refusal to see the bigger picture. I see my words repeated by others. My alternative view has become a meme. You cannot shut Radcliffe Library. The town has so few resources that it will be a travesty. Those kids need somewhere to do their homework, to print out pages available to the middle classes, but not to them. They need that space. The mums need the rhyming club for toddlers, the books and toys, the Lego club. The lonely need to see their ancestors through Ancestry.com. The knitters need others to clatter needles with. And words, stories, plots, tensions, information need a place to flourish in the minds of those who otherwise might not find them. Keep civilization alive for all. We got our reprieve. The number went from 3 to 4, but shelves were denuded in 16. Thank you.
Yeah, I've just become a librarian. Fuck the local authority, they don't have a clue what they're doing.
Yeah.
So, that's it for me now. No more of my bollock blowing dribble. That's even longer. So I'm going to welcome your second host for the night, which is Kerry. Woo!
Much to the relief or disappointment of Manny, there will be no bollocks blown in my house.
Rightio, I'm going to kick off with one of my own. Might be a bit ropey. Literally the ink still a bit, well, now smudged. Was wet, now smudged. It hasn't got a title. I got so annoyed the other day in work that I had to write something about it, but I've been too angry until now. Because the guy I work with who this is about is so stupid, I think. His mother must have bounced him, not dropped him. Yeah. If I'd given birth to that. Yeah, anyway.
Oh, don't get me started. Right, anyway. The token office atheist takes offence to the lapsed Catholic and the agnostic discussing Easter. He preaches loudly, angrily, that there is no God, no proof that Jesus was born. Well, there was the census, says the Catholic, the tiniest hint of provocation softening the S sounds in census. Rage. Pure rage. I'm fucked if I'm having this carry-on. Rage. With that, the atheist denies the existence of archaeology. He almost shouts, the Romans didn't keep records then! I find his lack of faith disturbing. Technically my boss, so I just have to hope he never listens to this. I won't tell him we've recorded it. Tell everyone else in the office so they can have a laugh. Yeah, right, okay, so where are we up to? We are up to, well, we haven't got one of mine, so we'll skip on to, I think we can put our hands together for Brogan next.
Hello everyone. I've written a poem about something that's quite close to me. It requires a story, basically. When I was younger, when I was about 11 years old, I went to a clothing store with my brother. He used to go there all the time. I had these really weird t-shirts in, kind of like not safe for work, kind of like 18 plus like comedy t-shirts. He had one which said, oh no, DOS, yes, which had a picture of a man. And a man and a woman, and then a man and two women either side. So that was the kind of merchandise this shop sold. And it was the worst shop I've ever been in my life. And it had lots of these things, but the worst t-shirt I've ever seen in my life, and the worst t-shirt in that shop was a t-shirt that said one choice phrase, which was dip me in chocolate and throw me to the lesbians. And it just was white, and it said dip me in chocolate and throw it to the lesbians, and it said nothing else. And I never understood it, because that phrase makes no sense, and it's the worst phrase I've ever heard in my life. Because is that a sexual thing? Is that sexual for him? Is it supposed to be sexual for them? They're not sexually attracted to men. They're lesbians. Never mind men who have been dipped in chocolate. Because if I were a lesbian, or indeed anyone, and a man who had been dipped in chocolate was thrown at me, I just called the police. Yeah. So that t-shirt kind of, and also the lesbians. Does he have specific lesbians in mind, or is that collective noun for every lesbian ever? So he wants to be, what does he want, a congregation of every lesbian, and to be dipped in chocolate and thrown at them? But this t-shirt basically works on the presumption that women, specifically lesbians, love chocolate more than they hate men. which I find implausible. Because I hate men. And I am. But it didn't make any sense to me. And I thought, who would buy this t-shirt? Who in their right mind would buy this t-shirt ever under any circumstances? I bought the t-shirt 10 years after the fact, but that's exclusively for the purposes of this bit, just to show you that it exists. It's not washed. Oh, because I didn't realise I was going to be here to read anything tonight, so I found this t-shirt. But yeah, so it exists. And Matthew, can you read what it says?
Yeah, dip me in chocolate and throw me to the lesbian.
Dip me in chocolate, exactly right. But I thought, how? I said, how, why? Why would this ever be a good idea? Why would anyone be dipped in chocolate and thrown to the lesbians, I thought. I thought, I need to figure this out. I'm sick of this. I've been haunted by this for 11 years. 11 years! What's it, 10 years? I'm not sure. It was one of them. It was some time. I was sad. Like, I've never forgot it. But I wrote to Power Matter. I thought, I'm going to get down. I'm going to get the crux of this. Why did they make this t-shirt? I hope we'll find out now. It's a bit scattered. It's a bit it's pretty stream of consciousness because I was shaken as I was writing it. But fear and rage and disgust at myself for bias. 15 foot. Daniel, this is a poem and it's called Dip Me in Chocolate. And that's it. Dip me. Dip me. Dip me in chocolate. Dip me in chocolate and throw me to the lesbians. Dunk me. Dunk me. Dunk me in chocolate. Dunk me in chocolate and launch me at the lesbians. Drown me. Drown me. Drown me in chocolate. Drown me in chocolate and sacrifice me to the lesbians. Sacrifice me to the lesbians. The lesbians. The lesbians. The lesbians. The lesbians are waiting. All the lesbians are waiting with breath bated. Sacrifice me to the lesbians. The year is 2086. The world as we know it has died. There is little life, not much has survived, but lesbians and cacao beans continue to thrive. It is barren, distant. There is little food, there is little water. The men are still trash, and the lesbians run everything. A homonormative meritocratic matriarchy where men are but flesh, products for breeding, for survival, for feeding. The lesbians wait at the base of the cliff with bated breath. It is almost time. I have been selected. I am nude. I am beaten. I am trash. I have been selected. The head lesbian stares at me and hoists her non-phallic staff into the air. I am pushed and submerged in a pool of russet hell. It cascades and pirouettes into my nose, mouth, ears, and I feel the weight of it inside me, dragging me deeper towards a delicious death which I have been dropped into, dipped into. I am done for. At the brink of consciousness, I am saved, winched from my fate, dragged to the shore, then thrown ritualistically, yet without care, because I am trash, over the edge to the lesbians. The lesbians. I am crippled. My chocolate-covered legs are broken. My chocolate-coated spinal column is shattered. The pool of mocha death seems an oasis now I've been thrown to the lesbians. They are descending upon me. In desperation, trying to claw at my flesh made palatable and bitter and sweet by chuck-chuck. They have no choice. I have no choice. I watch as each part of my body is torn from me and devoured liberally by the lesbians in a frenzy of rigidity and hunger. My legs and arms are theirs to plunder. I have a platter of protein with a coat of confection, and they will not rest until they have savoured every last section. I am senseless and broken and collapsed and hurt. Life slipperily drains from me as I lie in the dirt. But just at the end, the last beat of my heart, I feel a hand brush against my gentleman's parts. Fucking result.
Listeners, don't write in and complain. I'm not interested. That was top quality. So fuck off. I can hear you typing, Andrew. Right. Okay. This puts me in an awkward position because now our open micers are a choice of one woman and one man. So in the interest of balance, we'll go for a woman one. We'll have a woman one. There we go. Don't complain. Okay, so I'm going to try. Last time I think I massacred a name, but I've been practicing it so I can massacre it all over again. So please put your hands together for Elaine Badulpa. Close enough?
It'll do.
Give your real name.
Okay, this isn't a poem, but it's something that I've been writing. 3 years ago we moved to our new house, and we wanted a small garden, and you should be careful what you wish for, because now we've got a field, and a big tree, and lots of animals and birds, and I decided to write about them. So this is just a part of my story. Thank you so much for attending tonight's meeting. We have a lot to cover. As many of you have noticed, the bright, colourful tent has reappeared on the lawn. It looks like the female from the house resides in this occasionally, even in the rain. There have been some casualties. My advice is not to go in the tent. Remain under tree. The human does not take kindly to being bit over and over again when trying to get sleep. I myself had a lucky escape. Some comrades have suffered. Even a spider succumbed to the attack. Us fairies need to understand that even the female human has her limits. Her caring rescue of Bee was gallant. He didn't survive, but he had the best chance. We have had to move house. I know it was hard. We can no longer use our toadstools. The humans want a tidy lawn. Tree has plenty of room for us all. Playtime, children, is allowed under the tree. If you stray, I cannot guarantee your safety. Can we all get over our disagreements and accept our fate? Let's go back to sprinkling fairy dust of good wishes. Biting isn't working. They probably don't even realise that they have upset us or even exist. The humans have maintained so much. The bees have zero complaints. And the butterflies are returning. The grasshoppers did have a shaky start when the humans first moved in. The cat, Whiskey, did kill a few while playing with them. They are fighting fit now and multiplying again. What about the ants? And the green fly? What about the snails? Yes, I know. They have had difficulties. I feel, however, that the humans would like their territory marked. The roses will not bloom with all the green fly. The snails are not normally killed, just thrown over the wall. Some do suffer the fate of squashing. But I do feel that it is not deliberate. And the ants. The ants need to be told they can't go everywhere. To finish, spiders, please tidy up your unused wedding. Snails, mind how you go. Thank you to Tree for his accommodation for our meeting. Same time next week, everyone.
I keep toadstools in my garden. I like them. Rightio, right. We are going to wrap up our open micers now with Greg and Al, please. So if you'd ever.
Hey, how are we all? Fantastic. Okay, this is a bit abstract. But I was going to do a humorous one, but it needs a bit more work, so we'll have to make do with the abstract tonight. So, Here we go. Imagine you're looking out over the valley at Peel Tower on Holcombe Hill, because that's kind of where this is set. Okay. There we were, the six of us, stood on the plateau, looking across the valley. Our home now a forest, thick with millions of twists and tangles. Occasionally, a building, which one or two of us recognised, pierced the great thicket, an eerie reminder of the other side. But despite our concerns at how new and different our home valley was here, we knew the essence of our homes which lay beneath, whether brick or branch. We knew the soul of the blueprint which lay down there. We'd seen this while deep in meditation at our tower on the other side. Now, we felt that primal twinge, that calling, which seemed to call with the animals and birds of the valley, towards something that we knew was our destiny. We couldn't see it or hear it, but even from across the valley we could feel it, taste it. Standing on the precipice of a quest, we didn't even have to look at each other as we felt our spirits sink. It's time, Tammy said, feeling the kindred spirits of her team. We followed her down with plenty of composure. The rawness of the forest produced something unexpected. The main feeling as we descended into the valley was a deep, unreal feeling of peace and tranquility, away from what naff civilization had become. All around the cavernous forest, there was a dual statement. We're all powerful, but we love you. And this drifted around us on a silent echo. We knew what we were stepping into, but we knew that the arena, unfamiliar as it was our home turf. Yeah.
First off, could I have a huge round of applause for every open mic we've heard in this little Woo! Section, please? Hope you enjoyed your break. We are now going to have our final headliner for the evening. So she's going to introduce herself, tell her a little bit, because she's got some exciting stuff going on at the moment. So, could you please put your hands together for Rosa Wright?
Good evening. Thank you for the introduction, and thank you to everybody else. It was some really amazing stuff on tonight. Really, really cool. I have no idea what to say now. I always thought I was just going to do poetry, but I've got to do self-promotion as well.
Oh, right. I hear tell of an album of sorts.
Yes, did an album in December with a chap called Robert Paul Corliss, who's a Manchester-based musician and producer, with a band called The Evil Paw and Gabrielle's Wish. We did kind of a poetry musical mashup. You can hear me rotating some spoons gently on one of the tracks, and there's a bit of singing and stuff as well. You can find that on Spotify. It's volume 22 with Robert Paul Corliss. You can also find it on Amazon if you want to pay for it. And
Which of course you do.
Or pay for a Spotify. So I don't know how that works. There's also something called Visa, which I think is quite popular in France.
I've seen adverts.
I'm getting some snaps for Visa. Oh, international crowd. Right. Okay. So yeah, there's the poem out. I've just released a website showing my pictures of me doing this, mostly with lots of awkward faces of her. Would you want to look at lots of pictures of me with my mouth open?
Online. That sounds well done.
Well, maybe I'll get more hits. That's fine.
It is out of the watershed, so.
We're out of that, right? So there's that going on, and various bits and pieces. But the highlight of my career at the moment is being here right now. Great being in the Bunbury Anthology. Please go and buy that, because I'm in it. and I think that leads me neatly onto my first poem, which is one that was featured in the anthology. It's called Wobbly Gob.
Yes!
Someone said it before.
I like you so much. You make my gob go all wobbly. My words all bump like heffalumps. You leave me simply dumbstruck, stumped. No guy has ever made me so shy or tied my tongue as tight as you. It flaps uselessly, like the one in my shoe. The first flush of a crush turns my words to mush. Flutterbys all stutterby and my guts are all a rush. I feel all weak and I feel all flustered. My knees turn to jelly and my brains turn to custard. And even when I've mustered courage, my attempts at speaking turn to porridge. I feel all trembly and my belly's full of knots, searching for sweet nothings that I've desperately forgot. I feel my tongue swell and muscle turns to blob, but it seems my head's no longer connected to me gob. So I flip flop and I flounder, going round and round and round until I think I found a sound, but it gets stuck between my teeth like a piece of spinach leaf. I'm aware that you were staring, but I'm past the point of caring. If I could speak, I would be swearing and endlessly declaring how I love you so. But we'll never hit it off if I can't even say hello. I like you so much. You make me gob go all wobbly. Maybe one day I'll let you know. Thank you. So I was a bit worried this evening about doing stuff that might involve any foul language. But after the first gentleman, I don't see that as being a problem. Who here, like?
So the listeners, the first gentleman just doffed his cap.
A gentleman indeed. So who here likes monkeys?
Woo!
Yeah,
woo!
I know, right? They're like our closest relative, and you know, some of them are closer than others. You know, if you ask my waxing lady. So this is a poem called Monkeys. Here's my rendition of the human condition. We're monkeys that like to fuck. If you don't like to fuck, then you plumb out of luck. We're wired for desire, you're stuck. Oh, we laugh at the apes and their sexual japes, and we think that it's all in our past. But art's about fucking and science about fucking. We're monkeys to the last. We think we're so clever with our human endeavours. We are no longer apes in the trees. Nah, mate, we're all monkeys that like to fuck. We're obsessed with the birds and the bees. Well-formed opinions are not our dominion. Why the fuck are you asking for mine? I'm just a monkey that likes to fuck and get fucked from time to time. Oh, we think we're advanced, but it's all down to chance that we've lost all our old body hair. And if you're looking for something beyond this existence, well, my friend, it just isn't there. They cry evolution, they cry revolution, they talk all the time, by choice. But we're all just monkeys that like to fuck. Who the fuck gave these monkeys a voice? Thank you.
Woo! Yeah!
So speaking of monkeys that like to fuck, I went to a wedding. not anybody in it, no.
Do you want us to cut that bill?
I went to a wedding a few years ago in Barnsley. It was kind of a surreal experience. It was a skinhead wedding, some friends of mine. I know, yeah. It was quite esoteric, it was quite a specific thing. And I went along and there was lots of young men going dancing the entire night. So, picture the scene, and one of these gentlemen who, for the, you know, to protect the innocent and the very, 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 very guilty, we will call Bob. So, imagine for this, for those at home, I am swinging my arms wildly, but, just imagine that noise in, like, human form. And so Bob comes up to me and he's like, all right, darling, my name's Bob. I've got one bullock and a really small knob. I'm on the dole, ain't got no job, and on the weekend I go on the rob. Yes, I make little old ladies nervous because I've just finished my community service. I can't sing, I can't dance, I can't do much, but I'd like to give your boobs a touch. So come on back to mine tonight after 10 more beers and 2 more fights. And I was like... nah. Bob. Because you see, your one lover like some pissed up Count of Monte Cristo. I can't tell if that's cologne or if you brushed your teeth with Bisto. And as for your invitation, I think I'll give it a miss. Because I could drink your weight in booze and never be that pissed. No. Your attempts to eat my face are the opposite of charming. I think if I went home with you, that would technically be self-harming.
Yeah!
You're dumb, you're slack, you're scum, you're not sexually appealing. You need psychiatric help, not sexually healing. Though I must admit, you've got some kind of animal charm, of course. Because you're balder than an eagle and you've got teeth like an horse. But I'll never look a horse straight in the gob if it's a gift. So if your flatmate's going my way, then yeah, I'll have a lift. Thank you. Woo! So we're gonna, rather than lower the tone any further, I'm going to bring it up a notch. Has anybody come across Stirred or Stirred Press in Manchester?
Yes.
Yeah, very good feminist poetry collective, very suitable for these earrings and these trousers. I'm just posh enough to get away with wearing pyjamas like all the time. It's brilliant. What are you doing? Yeah, Karen's got pyjamas on as well.
That's my pyjamas, you know.
I'll rub in a poetry sleepover. This is wicked.
I sleep naked.
Yes, I'm naked.
Got out of that one.
Right. Anyway, sorry, I said I was not going to lower the tone any further. Stead do workshops and things. This is a poem that I wrote at one of the workshops, and the workshop was based on monsters. So this is Gorgon's POV. I go to the parlour to set my snakes in curlers and drink my mother's ruin, Gorgon's gin. The mirrors are all covered, my mother's idea, after Auntie Agnes saw herself. Now we use her for a planter in the garden. Lovely in the spring. The serpent seep, Pantene Pro Venom. Cotton mouths made soft as silk, scented with adder's milk and ylang ylang. I wouldn't mind, but it keeps your lanny landing in my drink. Head to toe in black, I spruce myself, but feel a lack. Something's missing. Accessories are so important, darling. I prefer Gucci handbags, but a new Perseus will do. Thank you. Speaking of monsters, who here likes Donald Trump?
Oh boy.
We're at a poetry evening. Nobody does. Of course not. Of course not. So, let me just find it. Stop amongst yourselves. Those naughty boys in class. Take your hat off in class, sir. So, you have the time? I didn't even have to use my social worker voice. Maybe it was a social worker trousers.
Sorry.
So this is about like the American dream, as it were. I saw the man on TV with $1 million, and my mama said to me, you better start working, because all you got to make is $1 million, and you can be president too. So I sold a cart of crackers to the Green Bay Packers, who sold them to the little Walmart workers selling stackers, who sold them to the kids at Betty Crocker and their snackers, who said there's nothing finer, but it's cheaper out in China. But all I gotta make is $1 million, and I can be president too. So I said, I know, I'll make a television show. I sold it to a network and an actor out to get work, and guitarist who did fretwork on a theme tune made by Kraftwerk, but they said throw in the towel, because it's been done by Simon Cowell. So... all I've got to make is $1 million, then I can be president too. So I said, hey, great, I'll buy and sell some real estate. So I bought a patch of land, sold some bad debt to Pakistan, made some blueprints and some plans, and I tried to hire some Mexicans, but they got stuck behind a wall, and I want to shout and bawl, because all I've got to make is $1 million, and I can be president too. And if they're letting Donald Trump do it, then maybe anyone will do. Woo! Relax the beach. Let's have a palate cleansing.
The beach. The beach.
The beach with the lesbians. Beaches or lesbians? Which one's better?
Lesbians on beach.
Yeah,
lesbians on beaches.
Yeah.
Bisexuals on promenades.
You always have to stick to the chocolate, wouldn't it?
The clamshell bra would be very sticky.
Don't say clams.
I'm going to say clams.
Sorry, but clams. No.
Clams. I mean... So, moving on. Beaches are good. And I took myself for a little holiday, like a little day trip last week. And I went to Rhyl in North Wales. Ooh. Oh, cheers for Rhyl. Good. So this is a little poem about Rhyl. Everyone's holding their breath. It's very exciting. Bleak land of leeks and sand, murky seas and CCTV seagulls hover over me, regal. Welcome to Rhyl. The thrill knows no bounds as the brown ocean flows and pounds a rancid potion. The commotion of foam loans a sense of home. Garden gnomes and cheap plastic Chinese shoes march two by two and hang limply, waiting simply for feet. A seagull stalks me, but I have no treats, for they like chips and I have sweet potato salad, homemade hummus, avocado and organic lemonade. My dreams are laid in sand and pound world, pound land and pound stretcher, where you can get your bucket and spade and bet your bottom dollar on the bingo, or spend a penny in the shining amusement mausoleum, a good taste graveyard, before disturbing the silent deceased machines in the Queen's Market. My childhood sings of broken things, made whole to soothe my soul. The bleakness speaks of mother and father's caring hands, and I am my mother now. Joy cracks my face like the wind, and I carry my heart across the sand. Thank you. Woo!
How are we doing for time? Yeah.
Yes, o'clock. Anything
can happen.
That's good.
Right.
So I did a jazz night on Sunday.
Ooh.
Yeah. Cool. It was good. I don't know. I've obviously tickled you. This is great. Can we go to the beach? I did a jazz night. This is a poem inspired by Chet Baker. I kind of got into his stuff last year, and he was quite a horrible man in many respects, but quite fascinating and quite absorbing. There's a lot of some really good documentaries about him. This is a poem inspired by him. He could lie. He could tell the tallest tales, hot air that filled the sails of 1,000 ships, spit hot fat from lips that scar the tiny hands and fingers of all so fooled to follow him. Right in the eye. Oh yes, he could lie. He could lie under sheets and tables, under duress and in disabled toilets, and on top of other women and maybe the occasional guy. Oh yes, he could lie. He could lie. He could turn himself blue and curl girls' hair as his nose grew in their underwear with flair and wit. The cheeky shit in shirt and tie. Oh yes, he could lie. He could lie. Or he could stop and sigh and blow the truth on Boosh a while. But that's not his style. He believes his own brass, the foolish ass, and not bat an eye. Oh yes, he could lie. Woo! scene of jazz musicians and sort of drugs follows on from that. Lots of heroin and jazz, it goes together quite well, so I'm told. But anyway, I don't really know where I'm going with this, sorry. So I used to work in a drug and alcohol rehab, and while I was there, it really changed my life, being with people and meeting people and hearing some really incredible stories. This is a poem inspired by one of the clients I met, and it's also on the poem that I did, on the album I did with Robert Paul Collis. If you want to check it out with a musical version, some cool stuff going on in it. This is called The Doctor. If Dr. Freud was alive today, swapped his slippers for a pair of Nike shit kickers and instead of cocaine sniffed glue, he'd be you, Mr. Ego. Putting the psycho in psychoanalysis, emblematic of the modern paralysis, you were the very model of a modern major smackhead, shaved head and brain dead, grafting and wondering where the days in your veins went. The local constabulary were not your biggest fans as you were tipping back police vans like 9% cans, yeah. Life with you was once a literal riot. And yet, now, you're all peace and quiet. The bars you lived behind are now behind you, with nothing but the lines in your face and a barbed wire tattoo to remind you. A diet of metaphor, meditation and reflection keep the beast asleep as you take your 12 steps with a skip down Mona Street. You loom, Adidas hooded vulture with suspicious eyes above a cruel beak, but soft. A lark doth sing when he begins to speak. As he preaches his hard-won wisdom, the daily extraordinary story of addiction, listen to the penance of this rehab tenant. As amidst his luscious loss on lager lout laments, he surrenders and repents. Though he says he knows nothing, the room rushes to a hush as his brushstrokes delicately paint the elegant pain of his newly gained restraint. And you, Doc, that prime candidate of the welfare state, scourge of all creation, but especially Salford probation. Former nasty, scuzzy scrote, you scrawled up crusty £5 note, you crushed up can. Is it a bird? Is it a plane? No, it's Tenant Superman! With apologies written on scraps of foul tin foil spoiled with black oil and black lungs and blacker veins, now watch as the rooms ripple with the whisper of this refrain. The sinner can be born again. Thank you. Has anybody encountered a nice guy?
Yeah.
Yeah. Capital N, capital G. It's a brand.
Yeah.
It's a thing. The guy's like, it's that kind of friend zone phenomenon.
Dickheads.
Yeah. Proper dickheads. Now, the kind of guy who's sort of like, oh, I'll be your friend, I just want to sleep with you. That's so nice. This is a poem inspired by that. It's called Butcher. If you're going to treat me like a piece of meat, then please, be nice. Don't kill me twice. Wind me, dine me, slice me finely, then tie me up with twine and confine me. You're the butcher you think I'd like to meet, and you use your words to flatter and fatten me and keep me sweet. You put me on a marble slab, a pedestal for a golden slag. You're a cunning one. And though you act all sheepish, you're the wolf at my door. Turns out I'm raw flesh, your carnivore. And no matter how you dress it, chuck, dinner, a date, or a flat out buck, I'm still just carry on and cattle. I'm still on the market, I'm still just chattel. Because nice isn't nice when there's a price on my head. And nice isn't nice when you need to be fed. And nice isn't nice when you chop me to bits and see me as nothing but arse, legs and tits. And nice isn't nice when you lie and pretend while you're sizing me up that you're really my friend. And nice isn't nice when you talk of friend zones and chew on my ear like a dog with a bone. And nice isn't nice when what you expect for all of your efforts is an offer of sex. And I know underneath that your nice isn't nice. And if you took me up the altar, it'd be human sacrifice. But sometimes I'm a dozy cow and I don't really see what's actually on the menu. Me. But before you go and treat me like a piece of meat and you think I'm easy pickings, you should know that I'm prime rib and you're just chicken. Thank you. Woo! So, any tweeters? Someone tweets? Okay. Cool.
I twat.
Grammatical nightmare over there. I'm speaking of social media, though, I do have a Facebook page where you can see my performance stuff. It's Rosa Wright Performer. I also have a website, rosawright.co.uk, if you want to check it out. That was my piece of ruthless self-promotion done. Let's never do it again. So this is Armchair Anarchist. I'm an armchair anarchist, my heart is black and red. I occupy my living room and occasionally the shed. I rail against the government, I protest on the net. I espouse and rage and fume without breaking a sweat. I comment on The Guardian, Telegraph and Independent, kicking ass and taking names in bunny slippers resplendent. Yes, I've parlayed with Paxman, I've given Farage flack. I debate with Dimbleby, though no one on the telly talks back. I cry out no passeran and property is theft. So bring me some Darjeeling, because we've only Tetley's left. I'm a member of the union and I support collective action. I'm anti-fascist through and through with anti-social interaction. And it takes a lot of energy to get up out of my chair when I can sit online and tweet and tumble, like and share. Protests get quite dangerous. I prefer it where it's safer, inside my nice warm living room with a packet of pink wafers. Yes, I'm the armchair anarchist, my heart is red and black. And if you're out there on the streets, bring some milk when you get back. One more. We'll go back to the beach. We like it there. Just wash the sand out from your neck when you get back. So thank you very much for listening. It's been a pleasure. You've been a wonderful, supportive audience who've indulged my ramblings. And please like, share, and thank you so much to Chris and Kerry for being wonderful hosts, as always. This is called The Sea.
Hiccups, yeah. Carry on.
It's exciting, it's too much.
It is, it's so much.
This will never work if I love the sea and you love the forest. I'm the wild womb of the water while you're the tangled thread of trees. Where I am self-conscious of my heavy tread on roots and leaves, you spring and whip like a willow, with shoots for fingers and hands for feet. And you are scared of the wild wet waves which crash and crush the crumbling rocks, where I am weightless, transcendent in the tumult, soothed by the scum of the surf. My heart beats to the ocean's rhythm, while yours sways in the breeze. You are the firm and steady plant of roots, and I am the ephemeral foam of the seas. They don't mix. These score of horses in my chest which burst and cry on, while you dig your heart deep into the darkness, the dirt and soil holding you tight as you extend into the sky. Why try? There's no mixing the two. But I suppose there's always the rain. Thank you very much, guys. Cheers.
Words. So that was absolutely magnificent. So can we just put it together once again? Let's get those bollocks flowing. All over the right. So we always, well, I say we, Kerry always makes promises for our headliners, and I take half the credit because I say the words. So are they coming up, or the? Yeah, Rosie, would you
hungry.
Like to come up? And Mike, come up. Kerry's made these. I'm not taking half the credit.
Okay. This one is because I've got these new pens. I like scribbling with them. So, there we go, that was for you. It's sort of encouraging him to get a tattoo.
Should we have a together picture?
Okay. We'll do this one.
Yeah.
I'll hide that one.
Well, it's not in focus.
Get a classy bird on your arm or something.
There we go.
See, I'm allowed to say that. If he said that, I'd be outraged.
Thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, no worries. If you're going to put it in the bin, do it, you know, around the corner. Yeah. Thank you. No worries.
I love the pens.
I love the pens as well. They are £1.49 in home bargains. Other stores are available, but they are. I never made it. Sorry.
And this one. For Rosa. We're not going to describe what they are either. No. Because it's one of your five a day. That's
all. I like how Mike looked around when I said babe, though.
So,
he's a millennial.
So, yeah, enjoy them. I'll say the same to you. If you're going to put in the bin, wait until I'm out of. Like, I said, I love.
Right, yeah. So, thank you very much for
them.
All my mind's gone blank. So,
yeah, so. Thank you very much for coming along and supporting what we do here, trying to inject a little bit of culture into this small town. We'd have to strap it down and properly inject it. Like forcing someone to take an overdose. Cut that, Katie. I'm really sorry. It got very awkward for a second then.
Yes,
next month we have Rose Kondo. And we have a mystery guest.
Ooh.
If you want to find out who the mystery guest is, you'll have to come along and find out. Other than that, it's been an absolute pleasure. I'm sorry for all the bollocks. I'm sorry for all the awkwardness.
He's sorry for himself.
I'm sorry for myself.
Yeah,
yes.
So basically, if you see Mike anywhere, go and support him, obviously, because he's brilliant.
Yes. Same with
look
the
for Rosa's stuff online. If you see her knocking about Manchester, like, go up and buy her a cup of...
Just give me some change.
Give her some change. Buy her some jammies. She'd love it.
Some shoes.
Yeah, so, no, just buy her stuff. You know, just support local artists is what we're always trying to do, you know, support the things you love. Because if you don't support them, they'll be gone. And then you'll be stuck with Jimmy Carr forever. And just, yeah. that's my Jimmy Carlap impression. But yeah, so thank you very much. As always, if you want to buy any of the books, come and see us. If you want to buy the canvas, come and see me. It is a mere snip at £300. I will take £380. So thank you very much. I hope to see you next time. If anybody wants to request open mic slots, please do go on... the
Facebook.
Event, it'll be on Facebook on the event, so if you want to request an open mic slot, there will be a thread, a dedicated thread. Don't put it anywhere else or you won't be included.
What's
because
the date? What's the date?
The date? That would have been really handy to look up.
I
want to
find the date.
The last Tuesday in April.
It's the last Tuesday, yeah. So
yes.
Whatever the last date in April is, on the Tuesday, that'll be it.
Yeah.
Planning.
24th? Did I hear someone say the 24th?
Yeah. 24th from that man, look at him.
Brilliant, there we go. Thank
majestic.
I have a question, are you guys doing the saboteur? Or do you need Dominic?
Easily, yeah.